From the Passover Haggadah to the Mishnah and Back, An Introduction to Rabbinic Literature with Rabbi Reuven Cohn, Part 6. This recording is copyright by Reuven Cohn and released under the Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 3.0 license. For more information, including printed material to follow along with the class, go to www.reuvencohn.com. That's www.reuvencohn.com.
I would like to look with you right now at how the Maggid ends. Okay? The Maggid started, the telling of the story started in Mishnah 4 when they poured for him the first cup. They poured for him
the second
cup. Now, we have an analogy to the Kiddush. The Kiddush is, you pour the first cup of wine, there's stuff you say it, and then
you drink the wine.
So when you come to Mishnah 4, you pour the second cup, there's stuff you say, what do you say? The whole Maggid story, and at the end of the Maggid, you get to drink the wine. Now, it turns out when the Maggid ends, you have something like a mini Kiddush. How so? Let's turn to Mishnah 6. We're going to go to line 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And he, who wants to read?
And he seals this recital with the redemption blessing.
Okay. So the Maggid is going to be sealed with a blessing. And after that blessing, we're going to say Borei Pri Hagafen and drink the wine. Okay. What is that blessing called? That we're going to seal our Maggid with?
The redemption
blessing. Hebrew?
Geula.
Can you think of anything that you might call the redemption blessing? Well, in the morning before the Amidah, there's a redemption blessing. What is it?
Ga'al Yisrael,
blessed art thou, or you, who has redeemed Israel. That is redemption blessing. Now, the Mishnah has it's written down. Even though the Mishnah is the oral tradition, we're looking at a text here. Now, even once the Mishnah was written down, the form of prayers themselves remained oral. Okay? So it says the redemption blessing, the assumption is
everybody knows it.
Yeah. There's an oral tradition of what it is. Okay, so now let's move on another line. Actually, three more lines. Yeah. Next.
Ruth. Ooh.
So, Lord our God.
No.
Oh.
Rabbi Tarfon.
Oh, I'm sorry. Rabbi Tarfon says, who redeemed us and redeemed our fathers from Israel?
From Egypt.
I'm sorry, from Egypt.
Okay.
And
that's all. Who redeemed us? So, Rabbi Tarfon is a contemporary of Rabbi Akiva. Okay? So that makes him which generation of those five generations?
Third.
He's Gen 3. Mm-hmm. Okay. So he is saying, this is how the redemption blessing should be. I know the standard redemption blessing, who has redeemed Israel, Ga'al Yisrael, but I have a variation on it, which is the way it should be. How's this different? It's not just Ga'al Yisrael who redeemed Israel. Yes.
And redeemed our fathers.
Yes.
So, an
yes, but also Gaal Yisrael is who redeemed Israel. That's sort of our ancestors. Here, it spells it out, which seems very appropriate for Passover, mm-hmm. to spell out our fathers. Mm-hmm. But what else does it spell out? Who redeemed
us.
That's a motif mm-hmm. that's expressed in Mishnah 5, that this is supposed to be experiential. So this is a nice touch. Rabbi Tarfon's version, don't just say Gaal Yisrael tonight. Mm-hmm. Say Ga'alanu, who redeemed us. We feel redeemed. It happened to us. And once we mention us so bluntly, it's important to also spell out
our fathers.
Our fathers. And where it says Avotenu, it could have been translated our ancestors. Okay. We'll skip the next line. And apparently, Rabbi Akiva has something else in mind. Yeah, who's next?
So, Lord our God. Rabbi Akiva says, so, Lord our God and God of our.
So, what's the first word of Rabbi Akiva in the Hebrew?
Cain.
Is that how you start a blessing?
No.
So, presumably, Rabbi Akiva says, I like Tarfon's version, but it needs more to it. Now, before you look at Rabbi Akiva, it would be an interesting exercise. Is there anything you feel is missing in Rabbi Akiva? In Tarfon? Seems nice, few words, who redeemed us and redeemed our fathers from Egypt. So what could Rabbi Akiva possibly want?
Get us into Israel.
So keep let's continue. What does he say? Yeah?
So, Lord our God and the God of our fathers, may he bring us to other appointed times and festivals that come toward us in peace, rejoicing in the rebuilding of your city and joyful in your temple service, and there we shall eat of the sacrifices and the Pesach offerings, etc., until blessed are you, Lord, who redeemed Israel.
So what does he want to be included in this concluding blessing of the Maggid that Rabbi Tarfon's version didn't do for him?
He wants life, because he wants to bring us to other appointed times, in other words, that we should live, and that he wants peace, mm-hmm. so life and peace.
Okay, you're modernizing him a tad too much.
Oh, I am? Okay.
What does he want?
He wants to rebuild the temple.
Yeah, he wants...
He wants to get back to...
Now, what was with... Oh. He wants the Messianic era.
Oh.
And what's with Tarfon? Tarfon doesn't want that? It would appear this way. Based on the way this is structured, it is only Rabbi Akiva who wants this in the concluding blessing. Rabbi Tarfon was perfectly content with present and
past.
And Rabbi Akiva is insisting
on future,
the Messianic era. So, before Rabbi Akiva came along, what Passover, it was being redefined in those five generations. It did not include hope for the Messianic era. Mm. That's not what Passover is. Who changes that?
Rabbi Akiva.
Oh. Now, one can read this Mishnah as just Rabbi Tarfon has this version and Rabbi Akiva has a longer version. Or we look closely and we say, Rabbi Akiva is affecting a revolution in the way we look at Passover. Mm-hmm. That Passover is the time for the future redemption as well. It is not just about celebrating the past. Now...
So in these generations, is he the first one to sort of think of the, is he the one to introduce the Messiah and redemption, or has it been
he's
there?
He's the one who is introducing it to the Seder. And we are grateful to Rabbi Tarfon. Why are we grateful that Rabbi Tarfon makes his appearance here? Without Rabbi Tarfon,
we wouldn't know it was a new introduction.
It would be less clear that this was Rabbi Akiva's faith. Now, in the Talmud, there is a tradition about Rabbi Akiva's politics. What was his politics? Remember, he's generation three, and he is remembered. What's his politics?
Retro.
Retro.
He's for change.
He's remembered as a supporter,
active supporter of Bar Kokhba.
And suddenly, this is becoming very interesting. That Rabbi Akiva, so Daniel Goldschmidt says, this is one of the few instances where you see someone giving his opinion on the liturgy, on a blessing, and you can't help wondering whether you see some politics showing. That he is a believer in we've got to make the Messiah happen, and he's also a believer in Passover has to include the Messiah. So now it is, now, if this blessing occurs at the end of the Maggid, one would think that the Maggid, it's, you generally, there's a rule when there's a blessing, the blessing shouldn't introduce new motifs. They should have already occurred where?
In the story.
In this, all this stuff. Now you can search all this stuff. Where do you find mention of the Messiah in the Maggid?
Nowhere
except, you're right, nowhere, except something that we looked at, 3.1. It's really the prelude to the Maggid.
Here,
this is the bread of affliction. Let all who are hungry come and eat. Let whoever is needy, this year here, next year in the land of Israel. This year, slaves, political slaves, next year, free people. So Rabbi Akiva's view about the final blessing prevails, and that generated a need to... It was his view. It wasn't the general consensus. But the power of his personality made it prevail. Or perhaps it was the crying need that Passover had for new symbolism. So his blessing comes at the end with a messianic concept. And there was the messianic concept is also introduced at the very beginning of the Maggid. And then, at one other point of the evening, the messianic concept. At the very end of the evening. And both of those, the before the Maggid, at the end of the evening, represent Rabbi Akiva's concept. Now, I find it so interesting to think for a moment about Christianity. Yes, so? Yeah, you were going to?
I'm just wondering, at this point, Jesus has become the Christian Messiah in the present. So there is this...
Yes, it's a very...
It's a political issue on the table there.
Okay, there are any number of ways to think about this. It's a fascinating issue. Is this a response to Christian messianism? Or as I prefer... As I prefer to think of it, it's two parallel responses to the same pressing issue of the present we are living in is leaving us very unsatisfied about the future of the Jewish people. We don't have the ritual that we need in Passover, and the rabbis of the Mishnah introduced Torah study, a resonance from the Bikurim ritual. Various rituals develop over time, and while Christianity is introducing its powerful message to its Passover, Pak, Pascha, Easter, Rabbi Akiva is at parallel development, right, is introducing what will ultimately be the Jewish version of the very same idea. So one can think of Rabbi Akiva as this towering Jewish figure, and on the Christian side, perhaps Paul, and see them walking or working.
And is this Paul's time? Or
no. So Paul is in 70, 80, 90.
Yeah.
And, but it is really, it's very powerful to compare the Christian approach,
right,
to what has become the Jewish approach.
Yes.
So this concept of Daniel Goldschmidt speaks about this briefly in his Haggadah, and I once gave a talk about this at Congregation Shaarei Tefillah, and the great revered Professor Alexander Altman was present, and I gave my talk about Rabbi Akiva really introducing a new paradigm for Passover, which catches on. And Professor Altman came up to me afterwards and said, "Mr. Kohn," with his German accent, "what you said today was a mito shel Torah," which means it was the truth of what the Torah really means. So I've treasured that little compliment. But it's certainly, now we need to spend a moment on this to check out that final blessing of the Maggid. What number is it here in my numbering system?
It's 13.4.
13.4. So what do we got? Who's reading it?
I've been cheating and looking at it.
Okay, I'll read. "Blessed are you, God, our God, ruler of the universe, who redeemed us and redeemed our fathers from Egypt."
Who likes that? Who's that?
That's
Rabbi. No?
No, Tarfon.
Rabbi Tarfon.
Literally.
Yes?
"And brought us to this night to eat matzah and maror."
And what aren't we eating?
Greens.
No? Pesach.
The Paschal lamb.
Right.
Okay,
and then it comes Rabbi Akiva.
Yes? Read it.
Okay, "so too God, our God and God of our fathers, may he bring us to other holidays and festivals that will come to us in peace with happiness, in the rebuilding of your city and with rejoicing in your service. Then we shall eat of the sacrifices and of the Pesach offerings, whose blood shall be sprinkled on the wall of your altar for acceptance. And we shall thank you with a new song for our redemption and for the deliverance of our souls. Blessed are you, Lord, who redeemed Israel."
Wow.
So when you say wow, it sounds like there's something fresh and new in this blessing.
Oh, yeah, this is really cool.
Because when this blessing comes up on Passover, we're already tired.
Mm-hmm.
But it's wonderful to bring it to life. And now we're ready to recite the Borei Pri HaGafen, and we've truly deserved the wine of the Maggid.
Yes.